Knobs is brought to you by Atomic Film and Design. Atomic Film and Design has helped dozens of corporate and creative clients strengthen their brand with graphic, web, and film design from historic concert venues, local businesses, and record labels. Atomic Film and Design works with a network of creative professionals like me to uncover what makes your business or band truly unique. Show the world what you can do. With a little help from Atomic Film and Design, start your new project now at atomicfilmshop.com.
You're listening to Knobs, a podcast created by music geeks for music geeks. Now, here's your hosts, Matt Diamond and Chris Nickel.
Welcome back. My name is Matt Diamond.
And I am Chris Nickel.
This is another great episode of Knobs. And when I say that, I am certainly trying to be modest. But the episode that we have for you today, this is kind of groundbreaking for you and I, Chris. We have a rapper. We've got a hip-hop artist. And, a pretty interesting one at that. And before we get into that, we got lots of stuff to talk about today. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing well, man. The weather is absolutely beautiful here in Ontario. I don't know for you and Peterborough, but like where we are, it's like 15 degrees right now, man.
Yeah, I think we've been complaining about the weather so much that it's important to also embrace the sunshine. And that is the
exactly
that is the case, man. Looking outside my window here in the studio, the sun is shining. I walked to work today and, it's just a beautiful day out there. It kind of helps to put a little bounce in the step when you know that spring is just around the corner for sure.
Oh, absolutely, man. It's, I was doing really, really well. I'm going to say it. I was doing extremely well today. I like clear, had it like that pep in my step, like you're saying. And then I made the mistake. It's not a mistake. It's a great thing to do. But I listened to the Joe Rogan podcast today, and shout out to Joe Rogan because his podcast's phenomenal. But the one with Neil deGrasse Tyson that he just did yesterday, dude, I am twisted right now. Neil's changed a lot of things when you listen to him, and especially when he's with Joe as well. But this one specifically, he just twisted my brain around in circles. Like I was like, oh my God, I'm questioning everything now. It's hats off to those two for messing my day up, man.
Yeah, it's funny. I only have a certain capacity for things like that outside of family life and just work and like the normal swing of things right now. And when you're on no sleep and then something like that does kind of fester into your subconscious, I'm very specific about that kind of stuff that I let in because I only have so much brain power these days. So if it's something that is going to kind of melt my brain a little bit or it's something that's not going to make me feel all warm and fuzzy, I try to stay away. I put it this way. Like I don't need any more doses of reality other than that I get at 4 a.m. from Screaming Baby. So I try to stay away.
Yeah, no, it's brain energy is a big thing, man. And especially when you are being run on all ends with a new baby, to use that brain energy on something that is just going to literally twist you in circles is probably not the most efficient thing.
Yeah.
So
selective.
Yeah, it's a good decision. Don't listen to it. But everyone else, go listen to that podcast.
Yeah, it's got to be selective input when it comes to things like that. If it's not just like, hey, here's some guy who has a brand new album coming out, or it's somebody that's going to tell you all about how to be like positive and happy and the keys to your success, I'll gobble that stuff up. Or it's funny I use that term because I listen to food podcasts all the time as well. There's my friend, I think I brought it up in another episode with Noveller. I talked about this episode called Beyond, or this podcast called Beyond Bourbon Street, which is all about New Orleans. And another one that is the Bon Appetit podcast, which is also a publication that you can subscribe to. It's like it's a magazine, Bon Appetit magazine, but I listen to that, and then there's a couple others. In fact, you know what? I want to name drop this one podcast real quick because they are another Ontario-based podcast, and then we're going to get on to talking about some festivals and stuff. But this podcast has some really, really wonderful guests on it. The podcast is called Creative Control, K, like creative with a K, control with a K. And he is broadcasting out of Guelph, Ontario. I believe, but nice. He has had some really, really wonderful guests on that show as well, including like David Pajo from Slint and some bands that are from our own backyard, including the Lonely Parade and just some really, really cool guests that have been on this show before. So I want to name drop that because I think it's important that we all kind of help each other out as far as that goes, And then you and I have talked about Elliot Smith endlessly on this show, and there is a podcast now called Say Yes. It's an Elliot Smith based podcast, as Elliott Smith's Either Or is celebrating its 20th anniversary this upcoming weekend. So I thought that was kind of cool to name drop that one too, because, well, let's face it, Elliott Smith comes up on the show all the time. So a couple podcasts for you to check out while you are spreading the gospel of Knobs, of course, but Creative Control for sure, and Say Yes, which is an Elliott Smith based podcast too. So I wanted to name drop those for sure.
That's great, man. Yeah, no, Elliott Smith is, I believe he's kind of ingrained within our manifesto. Like it's kind of how we started with a lot of our guests. They were all intertwined through 6 degrees of separation. So.
Totally. Yeah. I'm sure people are kind of like, I should probably know Elliott Smith by now, if not, you know, every single note of every single song by now, because we've been bringing it up constantly. So today's show is certainly different, different feel, different flavor than anything that we've done on the show in the past. But before we start talking about our guest today, lineups for festivals have been released. Chris, is there a you know, a number one as far as the festival season going for? Hi, puppy dog. Is there a number one as far as the festival that you will be attending this summer? Is there one that is jumping out at you right now?
I don't know yet, man. Like, I'm going through them. You know, there's some that they obviously come out as a lot of people are more disappointed this year, I think, than anything else, because there's a few of the major festivals that seem to be, I guess, lacking with what they typically go with. You know, Bonnaroo, for example, is very lacking in the whole jam band type genre, which is a kind of huge step away for those guys. But the Ottawa Blues Fest, I think they call it something different now, but that lineup was released. That's really intriguing for people here, I guess, in Ontario. It's a monster lineup this year.
Here, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, LCD Sound System, Gary Clark Jr., Tegan and Sarah, the Shins, who are on a couple of different festival lineups this year, of course. But man, there's a ton of stuff on this one here. So that's kind of cool as far as Canadian fans go for, you know, the nation's capital. That festival is happening July 6th through the 16th. But let's keep it right here in our own backyard real quick and jump over to Way Home. Way Home Music and Arts Festival.
What's your thoughts, man? What's your thoughts on Way Home?
There's nothing on here that would draw me to that festival. But that being said, now that we're doing the podcast, I'm really doing my best to try to get us into as many of these as possible anyhow. But like, I see bands like Constantine's on here, Frank Ocean, Tegan and Sarah, once again, the Shins for sure. I have no fucking idea who Marshmello is, but Marshmello has been, I tweeted about this the other day, and I'm not going to hate on anybody, but this is a guy that literally wears a marshmallow on his head. It's the same, you know, vibe as far as EDM goes, and he's on every bill for everything. And
really?
I don't understand. Marshmello, and his name is above some other bands that I like, including the Constantines or like Death From Above, Marshmello. So Marshmello,
dude, we need to get that fucker on our podcast.
I don't know if I'm going to do that.
Marshmello is drawing.
He is drawing, and like I did something on Instagram about Marshmello, and people are like, dude, this just shows how old you are, I guess. But I don't know. Marshmello is on the Way Home bill, but Way Home is in Oromandante, Ontario, which is like near Barrie, I believe. Anyway, but July 28th through the 30th. So that is stuff as far as the Canadian lineups go. But you know, Coachella is just around the corner as well. The first weekend of Coachella is April 14th and the 21st. My favorite band of all time, Guided by Voices, is playing Coachella, so that's exciting. But as far as the headliners go, like Radiohead, Father John Misty, Empire of the Sun, who I love, and on the Saturday, Bon Iver, Nicholas Jaar, who's one of my very favorite electronic producers of all time. Beyonce's headlining the Saturday, and then Kendrick Lamar's headlining on the Sunday as well. New Order on this thing.
That's pretty big. New Order, yeah. I saw that they were playing.
Future Islands have just announced a brand new record, too. They're on top of the bill on Sunday. And guess who else is playing on the Sunday at Coachella?
Who's that?
Marshmello.
Oh, dude.
What am I missing? I'm getting very old. Marshmello. Hit us up.
Well, here, I'm jumping over to Governor's Ball.
Oh, okay. That was the other one we were talking about.
Governor's Ball. Marshmello is on. He's number four from the top on Saturday.
Dude, Bonnaroo. Marshmello. Honest to God. U2, the Chili Peppers, Chance the Rapper, The Weeknd. All right. And then two lines down, Marshmello. Marshmello.
You know what? He's probably the most famous like electronic musician right now. And you and I are just showing how obscenely old and out of touch we are. All of our listeners are like, oh, fuck, these guys. What are these guys, like 80? They don't know who Marshmello is?
Cred is gone, just like that, because of Marshmello. It's the same time that I had some guy tell me that he was a huge fan of Dead MAU5.
That guy, our buddy, our good friend Romo, good friend Romo, he works at a little print shop in just outside of Milton, Ontario, in Campbellville, and Dead MAU5 lives just up the road from this place, man. And he stops and gets coffee at this little coffee shop that is owned by the guy who does the silk screening that Romo runs for him, and he sees him all the time. And apparently, he's a really good guy, but he drives a very, very a very fancy car.
Yeah, it's probably a Lamborghini. His name is Joel Zimmerman. But this seems to be the thing. Like DJs with great big heads pressing buttons is the thing. Like fucking Marshmallow and Dead Mouse. I've been to a Dead Mouse show before. It's a trip. Don't get me wrong.
Have you?
Yeah, and I love electronic music.
Such a thing, man. Like,
but EDM is something to me that is a little bit more like a frat party. That's not really my thing. As opposed to being in a really dark small club listening just to really like great minimal techno or psytrance or something like that. I'm into that, but
yeah.
I'm not. Yeah, Marshmallow. I'm at a loss. But let's move on because I could go on and on and on. But there are certainly lineups being, I guess, released right now, lineups for festivals. And another one that is going to be announced very, very soon, and our good friends at Pitchfork Media. And Pitchfork is just about – I'm reading something right now. This just in, Beyonce will not be playing at Coachella. That literally was – honest to God – isn't that crazy that I just refreshed this page and it says right here at Coachella, following the advice of her doctors, Beyonce will not be performing at Coachella. So there you go. How timely of us. But that being
said. Wait for it. Hologram Bay.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what it's going to be, man. She's going to be up there on a hologram, guaranteed.
But Pitchfork Music Festival coming back to Toronto. And on Monday, February 27th, they will be unveiling the lineup for that, too. And you and I are doing our best to try to get over to Chicago and check out Pitchfork Fest this year too, and they never disappoint. There's always wicked bands that play Pitchfork. In fact, some of my favorite bands I found out through Pitchfork Media, etc. And the plug there. All right,
right on. All right, right on. Yeah, there's so much, man. There's so much to choose from every single year. I think we're waiting for Oceaga in Montreal as well, which is a lot of people are waiting for that before they decide on Way Home. And I think for kind of the metalheads or the hard rockers of the group, Tool really kind of blew everyone out of the water this year, announcing that they're going to be on the Sunday at Governor's Ball, which is a massive release for Tool fans. Been just salivating, waiting for them to come back.
So totally.
That's a pretty big inclusion.
Yeah, Maynard just announced too that he's in the studio with the band doing the wrap up for a brand new record too, doing vocals. And that's kind of like the first time that he's actually been in the studio with the band as they're still doing stuff, because normally Danny Carey and the rest of the band just kind of do the music and then he comes in and does the rest on his own. But right now he is literally like in studio with them. So that's kind of exciting.
Didn't you just see Maynard do a speaking engagement?
I did. He did a chat at U of T, which is a really, really neat venue. It was kind of intimate. There was a lot of people there, but it was still it was too quick though. I will say that. But he was there in support of a brand new book that he just released, and I have not even cracked the spine on this book yet because I have been so damn busy with some other stuff. But yeah, I did. It was really neat to kind of see him in that capacity, just to have him have a bit of a candid conversation about not only his life, but the band, and then talking and doing some passages from the book, which is called The Perfect Union of Contrary Things. So if you're a big fan of Tool, they're making a comeback in 2017, which is really, really exciting. And I wanted to touch on a couple other things. In fact, you did a little bit of like a one sheet as far as getting us ready for this chat today with a Sub Pop recording artist named Porter Ray. Before we get to Sub Pop and talk about Porter Ray, I do want to talk just really, really quickly about the Grammys. And it's right here in highlights, Bowie, Bowie, Bowie. And
and then last night, the Brit Awards were last night, and he took home some hardware. Some posthumous hardware last night as well at the Brit Awards.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, this is a guy who is posthumously literally cleaning up. And it is, you want to say too little too late, because I believe he was nominated. Did he win one?
That was his first Grammy.
His first Grammy. I think that he was nominated in the 80s for something else. And I'm sorry if I'm coming off as ignorant right here, but I am a big fan of this record, this Black Star record that was getting all of the attention. But it's just funny how he has been shunned for so long, and then all of a sudden, now that he's no longer with us, he's winning awards. But
that could be a testament to that record too, because that record is so good. You know, his last record was so fucking good. And, you know, if he had put out a shit record, he wouldn't be getting this. It's not only to Bowie himself, but that record is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I still go back to it all the time. But we did see some of these other, these other acts that – it's funny, too, because a guy like Sturgill Simpson cleaned up as well, and he was the one that was always, like, flipping a finger to any of the, you know, the award committees, so to speak. You know, like, he was never accepted as far as a country artist. I don't know if you've listened to his latest record.
I'm a huge Sturgill fan. He's still fighting that kind of, and I think a lot of classic country kind of guys are and ladies are kind of fighting against Nashville in a way. You know, there's a butting of heads of where country music needs to go or what should be accepted as country music. And, you know, you've seen such a transition in country music that it's really nice to see Sturgill just kind of stand up and be like, yeah, you know what? No, fuck this. This is country music, man. You know, having drum tracks that sound like a Whitesnake record might not necessarily be what country needs. And I strongly think Sturgill is what country fucking needs right now.
Yeah, and he's singing about some other things that have never been touched on, even like just singing about LSD and like just crazy other kind of like spiritual aspects as opposed to just like there's, you know, a tear in my beard driving big trucks and, you know, you know, the way that the industry has gone. It is certainly the kick in the ass that the country industry needed. And I will say, as far as being a DJ in a rock radio station, I am so sick and tired of talking about Metallica and Lady Gaga. I know that you were, the jump off the stage thing was hilarious. The whole thing was so embarrassing. I had to have a shower after I watched even the clip afterwards because I never watch award shows. It's very, very... it doesn't happen. I just don't watch award shows. But afterwards, of course, working in rock radio, you got to talk about shit like this all the time.
Cooler talk, man.
It's certainly water cooler talk. And everybody, like, we do what's called the Big Five. And if there are Big Five topics that the world is talking about, then we need to talk about them for sure. But, like, some of the prep sites that I open up, it was, like, even a week after the Grammys, it was still, the conversation was still going on about how James Hetfield is still pissed off and... You know, it's just enough is enough. Okay, I understand. Metallica put out a record. They got on stage with at the Grammys. You know, Lady Gaga's verses came through. His mic was not on. Time to move on. I don't know how else to say.
Yeah, what I will say about it, man, and just to touch on it, and I'm a big Lady Gaga fan. I'll reiterate. I'm a fan. I think she's really super talented, and I honestly feel if she got up there and just fucking wailed and just sang and performed as opposed to trying to be the showman on stage and all of these sticky things, I think it could have worked. And I think that's where the miss came, was just trying too hard, like the stage dive and all that bullshit, man. It's just like, we're not stupid, you know, like as much as people may think we are, we're not stupid, and people see through that kind of shit, man.
Yeah.
So that's all I'll say. I think she could have killed it. And I think they could have really, really kind of stolen in a night that was just, what's the Randy Jackson, little pitchy. Like there were some suspect keys on the Grammys. So I'm not sure if Mariah Carey's monitor engineer was working the fucking event or what was going on. Cause it was a tough event to watch. So that's all I'll say is that they had a chance to do it and Gaga just kind of overperformed the shit out of that episode. So
that is one way to put it. It was like,
yeah,
it was cringeworthy. And then the first thing I said, I was like, I wonder if that's the same tech that was on working New Year's Eve with Mariah Carey. somebody got their ass kicked for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. We're going to talk about Sub Pop real quick. All right. Today on the show, we have Porter Ray. Porter Ray, to my knowledge, is one of the very first signings as far as the hip hop genre goes that, you know, the world famous, the infamous Sub Pop Records. And I have talked about, last week we even touched on it. Some of our very favorite bands have released records on Sub Pop. More recently, I think it was the last Mogwai record was a Sub Pop release, but some serious, serious history from Sub Pop, from Nirvana, Mudhoney. Even the very first Band of Horses record was a Sub Pop release. This is kind of a monumental one for us because we have touched on some hip hop stuff, including the likes of Y and Yoni Wolf, who was on the show before. But this guy, this Porter Ray cat is somebody that has just such smooth dialect, and his the way that he puts his lyrics and his words together. He is truly an artist and a poet, a wordsmith, and he comes from a place that not a lot of you don't normally hear rappers from Seattle. I don't know how else to say that. Like, you know, we always talk about artists that are from New York and L.A. or Miami and Chicago, but to see somebody like Porter Ray getting some attention and signing a deal with a a label that is infamous from working with bands like, you know, Sonic Youth or Sleater-Kinney, it's a kind of a strange thing to see someone like Porter Ray doing a deal with Sub Pop Records. You know, like, what's, if you talk about even Soundgarden, what is the very favorite Sub Pop release that you would say, Chris Nickel? Like, what is your very favorite Sub Pop release?
Man, that's such a tough one. It's recently, well, some of the Wolf Parade stuff, man, like, here we have had Sub Pop on because we had Beckner on and Wolf.
That's
Parade's
right.
On,
there you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what? There's a tune by a band. I don't even know if they're together anymore, and I'm not even sure if they're still on the label, but there's a band called Rose Windows. And they're from the Pacific Northwest, which most Sub Pop artists are. Mm-hmm. But if you check up, I urge you to check this band out, Rose Windows. There is a tune that they have called Neon Trees, I believe. Anyways, yeah. that was a Sub Pop release. I don't know if they're still on it, but I would urge you to go check that out. It's a great fucking band. Band of Horses, like you said. Man, Sam Beam's been on Sub Pop. Iron
yeah.
Wine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
There's so many great records that they've put out, and I'm not even touching on like when I was 13. You know,
yeah.
They kind of controlled our earwaves for a long, long time. The Sub Pop releases. So
I think the most,
and then the newest release, like we just actually heard today, that Fleet Foxes are going to be dropping a song very, very soon, within mm-hmm. the next couple days, which is, for Robin, that must be a very stressful time, I'm
yeah.
sure, because
yeah.
I've heard he doesn't do very well with releasing new music. So
wow, okay, that's cool. I think that the big breakthrough for how do I say genre bending, almost, like the Postal Service record was a Sub Pop release too. You remember that, like featuring,
yeah, absolutely,
yeah, like Dentel, Jimmy Tamborello, and then of course Ben Gibbard, that's that guy's name, from Death Cab, and
he's kind of a big deal,
and Jenny Lewis, pardon me. But the Shins record that I really fell in love with as well, I think O Inverted World was a Sub Pop release too, and that was like kind of their groundbreaking record, going back, like, dude, that I think that was 16 years ago now. Hard to believe.
Yeah,
but
that's madness, man.
Yeah.
My wife saw the Shins in, like, a small club in Edinburgh with, like, 20 people, man.
That's cool. And they have a brand new record on the way as well, so maybe we can try to line something up with James Mercer from the Shins, too. And what I've heard is really great. Their last album, Port of Morrow, is going back like 5 years now, I think, and I'm a huge fan, and I've seen them live a few times too. So there's certainly a ongoing list of notable artists that have been on this label. This label has been around for a very, very long time, like its inception going back to 1986, and I think I pronounce it Poneman, Jonathan Poneman, and Bruce Pavitt, or Pavitt, these are names that they could go either way, so I apologize, but these are dudes that have brought some of the greatest bands to your ears since 1986, and I think today is just a really exciting time, because not only is Porter Ray one of their very first hip-hop signings, but that being said, he is just kind of in a category all his own, and this is a really candid conversation with him. Porter Ray has a brand new album that is set to drop next month in March. We get to talk about its inception, some of the people that he's worked with. And another name that we have to drop here is Ishmael Butler. And if you don't know that name, you might know the name Digable Planets. And Digable Planets and Shabazz Palaces are a couple of these groups that Ish has been related to, or at least done some business with or some work with. And Porter Ray was certainly brought up within that same vein. He's a young kid. He's about 28, I think, 27 or 28 years old, which is young. And he is, kind of the first person to talk about his past and his history or his connection to someone like Ishmael and Digable Planets and some of these other names that are kind of the people that brought him up in the up and coming career of somebody at this age who has signed a major record deal and name dropping some of those artists. So I thought it was important that if you hear us talk about Ish or Ishmael or Shabazz Palaces or any of these other artists, that is who we're talking about. We're talking about Cool Like That. cool like that. You know, Diggable Planets.
What a great record.
Yeah, like the Rebirth of Cool, I think, is the actual title of that record. But, you know, there's some serious history there. So I'm really excited. If you consider yourself a music fan, not necessarily like a huge hip-hop fan, this is going to be the guy that's going to convince you that it's not all about, you know, gangbanging, guns, cars, women, drugs. There are so many other things that are going down in this guy's story and his lyrics. And I'm just really excited to be able to introduce the world to Porter Ray, and I know that both Sub Pop and Porter and his people are going to be not only checking out this episode, but certainly sharing it on social media and all that great stuff too. So I think about around this time, why don't we just shut up and kind of throw over to this conversation with Porter Ray, and then before we wrap up this episode, like we've been talking for over 20 minutes now, but before we get out of this episode, we'll tell you what to expect, because next week is the exact stark contrast to somebody that is like a hip hop cool kind of poet like
John Denver.
Kermit the Frog is on next week with a guest appearance from John Denver. Let's stop talking. Let's throw it over to my conversation with Porter Ray right here on Knobs. Sound good?
Sounds great, man.
All right, let's do it. This is my chat with Porter Ray, the latest signing to Sub Pop Records.
After my thoughts darken while I'm talking to my shadow. Mother said I was cunning, imagination running wild, eyes racing, infatuated with money piles, pie chasing with
just relaxing. We've been shooting videos all weekend, so I'm today's my kind of my day off a little bit.
And now you're stuck with me.
Yeah. I wouldn't say stuck. I appreciate the opportunity, man.
Sub Pop came through once they told me that I had a chance to speak with you. I jumped all over it, which is this is an exciting time for you right now, isn't it?
It's an extremely exciting time for me. I'm living out my dreams right now, you know, about to release my debut album and with Sub Pop, you know. It's extremely exciting right now. I'm elated, man.
Man, I have so many questions for you, and the fact that you kind of just like started it off by saying the sentiment that I love to tell people is that this truly is the dream. Like, do you ever stop and really try to focus on the fact that the universe has brought this thing to you right now, that you're, you know, able to do your art, make a little bit of money, and, you know, like every day you're doing what you love?
Yeah. All the time. I mean, earlier today, you know, just, after wrapping up over the weekend and, you know, having this interview, you know, having things to do progressively every day, where I'm being productive, but getting to talk about my art and shit. I mean, yeah, I've been having to remind myself, and sort of pinch myself, you know what I mean? Every other day. And just be appreciative of it, you know, 'cause a lot of times it gets hard, especially as an independent artist, just grinding. And I mean, I guess in any job in life, you know, it gets kind of hard, but I really am, you know, like you said, making a little bit of money, creating the art that I love and working with the people that I want to work with, and I'm truly thankful. You know, my father and both my brother have been deceased for a few years now, and you know, I thank them all the time, you know, because I feel like it is definitely them and the universe conspiring in my favor.
Well, you get what you should give, right?
That's true too, you know. I've been working hard for a long time. I've been working hard for a long time in terms of trying to put out music, and I've been through a lot, but also just like you know, I never and I've been telling a lot of people this, I never had plans to it wasn't some mastermind strategy that I had where I would get signed and be putting out music or have any attention from labels or anything like that. I just wanted to create some dope shit and express myself and try to get some shit off my chest and you know, so it's really amazing for it to have come this far. Truly, you know, I did have you know, hopes and dreams of working with Sub Pop because of Ishmael and Shabazz Palaces and Dissatisfaction and knowing those guys. Prior to signing my deal, I those were people that I dreamed of working with, and to actually have them as my label mates and to have collaborated with them and taken it so much further than I thought has been an amazing experience. And, you know, it's really just the beginning, which is, you know, truly a gift.
Sweet. Well, I want to talk about the beginnings and the fact that you are, you know, this figure that is with you know, a legacy that is Sub Pop is something to speak on itself. But I want to talk about, you know, you talked about some of these rough times, of course, losing both your father and your brother. But I want to talk about what it was like in the household as you were growing up, too. Was music a big, I always start my interviews like this, but was music a big thing in the household as you were growing up, when you were coming up?
Yeah, it definitely was. Both my parents were huge fans of all sorts of genres of music. There was just really eclectic music collection and record collection growing up in my household, and constantly having music be played. Both my parents, that was kind of their thing. It was not a lot of TV. We weren't watching as much TV. It would always be music playing, and just like I said, a bunch of different genres. I mean, everything from, you know, the Beatles to Earth, Wind and Fire, and Eric Clapton, Carlos Santana, Frankie Beverly and Maze. You know, you start just rock and roll, a lot of funk, a lot of soul. My mother, you know, was really into classical music, my father into jazz. So just a really eclectic mix of music growing up that I was surrounded by. And in terms of my family in general, I have on both sides of my family, you know, I'm half black and half white. And on both sides, I have cousins that play instruments, can play guitar, can play the keys, can sing, you know, things like that. So on both sides of my family, I got a lot of musical influence, even just outside of my immediate family members.
When did you hone your skill? How did you know that you had this ability to be able to be somewhat of a wordsmith and then turn it into, this poetry that you do?
I've always written everything down. And in school, growing up, even when I was younger, I was always into language arts. I was highly interested in all of my writing classes, any of my creative writing classes where I could write poetry. And study poetry and write short stories and shit like that. And at a young age, I knew I always liked to read and I always liked to write. And my mother was she's a cultural anthropologist, and so she's very into language and linguistics and different forms of language, and so. I think I got a lot of that from her too, as well, just being really obsessed with the manipulation of words and the manipulation of linguistics, and being able to, being that I was reading a lot and I was getting, a pretty proper education growing up when I was younger. I went to private school for most of my life, and being able to mix slang, but articulate it in a way that was intelligent, that came off intelligent. Was something that really interested me, and I started to hone that at a young age. And I think I've always been a really good writer in terms of rapping. Now it's been honing my voice and just finding my voice. But in terms of writing, since I was really young, I've always been writing, and I started writing my own rhymes when I was in middle school, and at 12 and 13, and I started recording rhymes. And writing songs when I was in high school at 14 and 15 and stuff like that. But I've always heavily been into creative writing and just literature in general, language arts in general.
Yeah, when your mom has a title like that, I guess those are some pretty big shoes to fill, right? It's kind of like the expectations are certainly going to be there.
Definitely. I think that was, in so many ways, since my mom's and this educator and that was really that was really something that was important for her and important in our household, education, and I've been able to sort of find that balance, with her and with that upbringing and with that influence in terms of being able to create something and talk my shit, but articulate it in a way where, everyone can understand it. And I think it's worked to my benefit.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a dying breed of, actually, you know what? Maybe not. Maybe with the hip hop culture that I grew up with. I mean, I guarantee I'm a little bit older than you are. But yeah. with the stuff that I grew up with, I found that there was kind of like this, downward spiral of where there was a moment that the intelligent rappers were kind of going away for a second, and then I started to see a lot of obviously with the videos and the cars and the cash. Do you find like as far as the intelligence factor, is that coming back into the forefront with a lot of the artists that you kind of run circles with?
Definitely. I think so. I think that Like you said, because it never left. There's always been intelligent MCs, not to discredit any MC or any rapper, mm-hmm. anyone who spits lyrics, because it's all about style, you know. So everyone's gonna have a different style, but for the cast that were, I think, articulating their lyrics a little bit more and maybe trying to touch, like you said, you know, with the cars, cash, and shit like that, and trying to touch on different topics, I think that it, you know, like you said, in terms of it dying, but never left. And I mean, you got somebody like Kendrick Lamar, who's, you know, quite arguably the biggest rapper in the world, you know, who's putting out incredibly intelligent music and touching on, and, you know, in incredibly deep topics and shit like that. And so I think that it's still making its comeback, or at least stepping back into the light in mm-hmm. terms of popularity. Not to say that it ever died out, but just, you know, coming back into the light in terms of popularity. Trends go up and down, you know. It was in the 90s and shit like that, and you know, because you're familiar, mm-hmm. it was a lot more popular, you know what I'm saying, to come off, and I think just stylistically and the delivery of the lyrics, everything just had a little bit more depth, you know. But you know, time shift and trends shift and shit like that. And I think that intelligent hip hop and even especially now with how everything is, in terms of the climate politically, I think there's a lot of MCs that are making more politically forward records, you know, or their content is a little bit more political, or they're using their voice to put out records. You know, you got Nipsey and YG putting out records like Fuck Donald Trump and shit like that, you know. So I would say that it's becoming a lot more popular, or at least it appears to be that it's coming back into that popularity.
Do you find that the climate around you within Seattle, does that seep its way into your content? Was that like the people that you surrounded yourself with? Let's talk about those people and how that's influenced what you do.
I think for me, because I can only speak for me in terms of Seattle, but for me, it was always something that struck me about certain MCs with the replay value. And like you said, so because I'm a huge fan of all music, but rap music and all rap music. But I really do appreciate when I'm listening to a record that I've heard 100 times and I still can hear something new, or something, a metaphor makes more sense to me. Mm-hmm. Or there's a reference that was made that now, you know, sets off a light bulb in my head. And I really appreciated that growing up and listening to certain MCs. I talk a lot about Nas as being one of my main influences, in terms of how vivid his storytelling was and his imagery within his lyricism. But I always appreciated that, and so I wanted to put that into my music. And in terms of it being, I think that's always just been me, and the music that I've listened to, and the MCs that I've been biased towards. You can open that. The MCs that I've been biased towards, or that I've been drawn to. But a lot of my friends don't necessarily take to the same MCs that I do, or take to the same music that I do. It's something that I always, like I said, I always appreciated about a rapper when I caught that line, or when I'm listening to their tape again, and just having that replay value and that depth to their lyrics. And it was something that I wanted to emulate and worked hard to put into my music, you know, and sort of to layer it and code it. But it also might be something that, again, I can only speak for myself. It could be something that's just unique to me, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's funny whenever we talk to, when I talk to MCs, Nas comes up every time. Is Illmatic one of the staples in your diet from early on?
Definitely. Illmatic. But it's funny because I always talk about, or with my friends, and when we talking shit and arguing about the best albums and people's best work, we talk a lot about Illmatic, but I really like It Was Written.
It Was Written.
I think It Was Written, because Illmatic was so raw in terms of what he was talking about and the content, But it was written, he was articulating it better, in my opinion. You know, it was just his rhyme style was cleaner and was more efficient. He was just a more efficient MC, I thought.
It was written, the Lauryn Hill joint on it as well. I Ruled the World was the single off that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's a great record. And that was my heyday. I think I was probably 18 when that came out, maybe.
Exactly that. So that's your prime, it was written, and Illmatic as well is definitely something that I still return to today. I might listen to that record, and especially in terms of finding inspiration and for writing, and in terms of how I want to structure a project, you know, and what I want to put into a project, I definitely reflect on Illmatic all the time. You know, come back to that. Both those records by Nas.
Have you ever had the opportunity, not to cut you off, have you ever had the opportunity to meet some of the people that you grew up listening to?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I've gotten a chance to meet, when I've opened up for people, I opened up for Pete Rock and CL Smooth, meet those cats. Opening up for Camp Law, I got to meet those cats. But that was more so also just being through Ishmael, because Ish, you know, those guys is Ish's people as well. And so being able to kind of hang with them backstage, that was more like a privilege that was given to me because of Ish. It's not like I really get to meet a lot of the MCs that I'm opening up for and no shit like that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Ishmael, who I grew up listening to from, you know, Diggable and everything. But also, I mean, I was listening. Shabazz was out before I was signed for a while, you know, and being able to work with him and just become friends with him has been, you know, crazy for me. And being able to work with, there's an MC named Infinite who's on my album. He's on the second single we just released, Arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of my favorite MCs of all time. Both these guys are from the neighborhood that I grew up in the Central District in Seattle. And to be able to be friends with these guys and also have records with these dudes, that's that shit means more to me than anything, you know, because those dudes are like Rakim and Nas in my eyes and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like those guys are the superstars from where I'm from. And so to be able to be friends with those guys means much more than you know, than meeting anyone else, honestly. And I had just haven't had the opportunity to get out of Seattle and get into the world and meet meeting these other MCs, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, not only are you on the you know, the same level as you know, these guys that we're talking about, but you're just on the up and up right now too. Like, these things
totally.
That are just bubbling under right now, that must be such an exciting prospect to not only talk about opening up, you know, for some of the groups, or like hanging out with some of the people that you grew up listening. Dude, you dropped like the Camp Low thing. I was like, Luchini, you know, to be even on the same bill as people like that when I was a kid, that was the shit that I was listening to when I was coming up. And if you have the opportunity to even be on the same bill as these people, think about what the future is going to hold for you. That must be such an exciting prospect.
Definitely. And it has been being able to open for, I mean, you know, again, Camp Love, P Rock, CL Smooth, J Rule, you know.
Come
There's
on.
Been a lot of cats that have come through Seattle that I've had the opportunity to open up to that, again, a lot of, even a lot of my friends ain't necessarily hip to those artists like that, you know. Like, a lot of people, a lot of my peers, my homies, homegirls, they, you know, they go crazy when I'm opening for 2 Chainz or someone like that, you know.
It's because I'm old, man. I told you, I'm old. That's why.
To these older cats. But also, you know, you hip to the music, you know, and you appreciate the music. But it has definitely been an honor to open up for any of these big name people, you know. And to me, they're all big names. And to, like you said, just to be on those bills. I mean, I'm the guy who I save all my flyers. You know what I mean? I got all the flyers from opening up with these people and got them in a shoebox. And all that shit is a big deal to me and is – has played a part in cultivating me as an artist and as an MC, you know what I mean? This is like my rap training, you know, opening up for these guys and seeing these guys perform and studying their performances on stage And now, like you said, getting my name on the same bills is I'm paying my dues. And it again, it still is, all of that is a part of a dream come true, you know, to be out here and be affiliated at all with any of these guys on their venues and shit like that. And now, like, you know, we talked about collaborating with these guys, you know, it's become just much, you know, it's gone much more further than I can imagine, man. But it's dope. It's dope as fuck.
Man, never stop stuffing the shoebox as well. So many of us have just gone to the digital medium now. There's something so romantic about having that tangible thing that you can actually pick up and take a look at, as opposed to everybody else just like fucking Facebook or whatever. I'm the same guy. I'll go to a show, I'll rip the poster right off the wall, even if it was just something.
Yeah.
Even if it's not something that I was a part of, but there's something in my rehearsal space with my studio. I have a specific memory with all those certain things that I can actually hold in my hand. And that's why buying a record is important. Keeping the ticket stub will take me right back to that place, you know, that something that is tangible, that notion. It's a dying breed. Never stop doing that.
Yeah, no, I don't plan on stopping. I like how you said keeping the ticket stubs. I keep all my ticket stubs from shows I've been to. I grew up, 'cause I'm 28, you know, so I'm not like stupid young, you know, but I'm relatively young, but I was still like right before everything just went completely digital. So I remember watching my older cousins and my older friends, and my own friends, who were doing well in sports and, you know, them, you know, being in the paper, everybody's trying to cut their little clip out or cut their picture out and get it framed and shit. And I still do that shit whenever I'm in the paper. I save it. You know
you
what I mean?
It.
For anything, you know, I want to have all that shit. 'Cause that it's special to me. It's something that, you know, no matter how big or small the stage, that's my life journey, you know, and that type of shit. I like having that memorabilia and those mementos.
Absolutely. It's literally a paper scrapbook to be able to see where you came from, where you are now. And that's what I want to talk about right now is this, you know, this legacy of Sub Pop and the signing. Tell me exactly the story when, I mean, I guess it was we're going back 2 years now when you actually signed on the dotted line, but you know, tell me about that.
Years.
Yeah, what happened?
Almost. It was actually in May 2014 was when I signed to Sub Pop. I signed my deal on Biggie's birthday.
Come on.
I think that's the 21st. It's May 21st.
Dude, that's my birthday.
Right?
Hey. Right? Come on.
You're talking about the universe and how everything is supposed to, I feel like I'm supposed to be, I'm at where I'm supposed to be in terms of the universe and my life right now, you know? And it's funny that you say that, but yeah, so I signed on Biggie's birthday, which was crazy in 2014. And it was something they didn't announce it until August of 2014. When I released my mixtape Fundamentals, but it was something that we had been talking about. I was kind of aware that they were, I already was, Ishmael's my people, you know? So I was already friends with Ishmael prior to the deal and prior to Sub Pop taking an interest in me. But I became aware, you know, sometime even before I signed the deal in May of 2014 that, Sub Pop had some interest in me and was just looking to maybe talk about some shit. And, you know, I got very excited by that and really kind of hung on to that, but put it in the back of my mind. It wasn't something that I thought, again, even was true until I saw some paperwork. You know, I didn't, them having interest in me was hella exciting, but it wasn't anything that was concrete to me. And so I was still continuing to put out music, but there I also had a situation with Interscope, where Interscope was trying to sign me, and we were on the phone and conducting Skype interviews like this shit and going back and forth and talking about a deal, but it just ended up the Interscope deal ended up not feeling like it was the right fit. And it was just something I kind of shied away from. And so I actually declined on the Interscope deal and which everyone around me at the time thought I was a fucking fool for, to be honest.
Yeah.
Everyone thought I was just, you know, stupid as shit to do that. And I'm sure they thought the same thing. But it was this song. So I'm going to say this too. There's a song on my first project called Black my first project, Black Gold, my first mixtape, and the mm-hmm. song is track number 3. It's called How the Blunt Feel. Mm-hmm. That's the song that got me my deal with Sub Pop, and that's the song that also got me the offer from Interscope. It was because I think that was the standout record on that mixtape to both of those parties. And then that's where they really became interested. So it was really from this song, How the Blunt Feel, and them getting hip to that or getting a whiff of that. And then, starting to approach me. But I turned down the Interscope deal knowing that I still had the Sub Pop deal kind of on the table, or that there was at least talks of that. And it was something that I was a little more interested in. I had already seen, like I said, I was friends with Ishmael prior to that, and I was friends with Stas and Stas the Boss and Sassy Black of Dissatisfaction. And so I saw how they were conducting their careers and themselves creatively as artists, and the freedom that they had to put out music, how they were going about putting out music, the kind of music that they were putting out. And I was really I was really drawn to that. I was attracted to that. And like I said, I felt like the Interscope deal was kind of the wrong fit, and I just shied away from it, and the Sub Pop thing became more serious. I think they probably caught word that I had turned down the Interscope deal too, and it just felt already like a situation that I was comfortable. Like I said, I was already attracted to the situation from knowing both of those artists, and then I really trust Ishmael. You know, he's a mentor, and he's like a big brother. And so I knew that going into a situation with him as well was that he wouldn't lead me astray, and that he wouldn't set me up for failure or anything like that, and that he would have my best interest. And I truly believe that, and I believe that he and the label believed in me. It was also a situation too where at Sub Pop, everybody has to listen to the record, everybody in the office, you know, and every single person. You know what I mean? It's like from the receptionist, you know, to anybody you could think of, to the CEOs, you know.
Like, president. Did you have like Mark Arm from Mudhoney sitting around listening to your album and shit?
Not any other artist, you know. But, okay. But all the whole staff of the office has to agree on the record, you know, before they sign you. And so everybody sort of unanimously was filling the record.
You didn't have to like check some janitor and be like, listen, this fucking guy doesn't like my record. There's going to be
right,
a problem.
The one fucker in the jury who's fucking up the case. Right. It felt good to have that. I didn't have that problem. You know, they really, the whole staff dug it. And when I heard that too, hearing that meant a lot to me. It felt good to hear that everyone in the building really has listened to your music and appreciates it, and that they're going to get behind you. And so then I ended up signing with them May 2014. They announced it August 2014. I dropped my mixtape and started. I had already begun some work on the album and everything. And then my son, I got two sons now, but at the time my firstborn was about 2. And a month after, like, in, it was, if they were, yeah, they told, they announced my signing in August. And I'd say in September, my son's mother got incarcerated for 8 months. And so I missed out on a lot of opportunities. As soon as I got signed, I missed out on going to Europe with Shabazz Palaces. And I missed out on a bunch of shows and shit like that. And it's actually been a lot of the process in terms of how long it's taken me to complete my record and complete a record that I'm really satisfied with, and try to juggle my career and being a single father, all happened right after the announcement of my deal, up until here we are now.
Yeah, but you seem to be a pretty spiritual guy. You got to be on the same path to know that not going to Europe at the time, that just wasn't, it just wasn't the time to do any of that other stuff because you had other priorities to take care of. These things come to you when you're ready for them, right?
Yeah, I looked at it like that. And honestly, I think it was supposed to happen that way. I mean, it's hard to say that it isn't being, with the past, it's hard to say. Mm-hmm. That it wasn't supposed to happen that way. But I truly don't think I was even ready professionally and in terms of my maturity to handle everything that was coming at that time. I, it's being a professional artist is so much more than I expected. It's so much more work, especially with working with an indie label or trying to be an independent artist. But just artists in general, when you're a professional, there's so much more that goes into it in terms of rehearsal and time management. And I was still pretty immature in terms of where my mind was at that time. And I think I needed the last 2 years to grow as a person, as a father, and as an artist professionally, to where now with everything, I really do feel comfortable stepping into the arena. I know what I want and how I want to go about it. I have my career in my own hands, and I know how to manage it a lot better, and how to be a lot more responsible pay a lot more attention to the smaller details and the fundamentals of what needs to get done and shit like that. And you know, it really was it just was sort of something that was supposed to happen. I was going to call it a blessing in disguise, but mm-hmm. I really do think it, not whether it was a blessing or not, it was just something that was supposed to happen for me to grow in terms of being an artist and just as a human being. And I needed that.
Let's talk about the record itself. This show, this podcast has certainly evolved from being just like straight talking about production and the gear and you know, the tricks in studio and on stage and stuff like that. But as the show has evolved, it's just become more or less what we're doing right now, getting to know each other and getting, you know, your fans on board and getting, you know, the audience to be a little bit more broader for you. I like to talk about the process of the record, or maybe where it goes from being, you know, a song or something written down on a piece of paper right up to the production. How involved are you in the entire process as far as the production of the record goes?
Completely involved, 100%. The only thing, I'm not making the beats, you know, and a lot of times, most of the time, I'm not picking the samples for the records. I'm not even picking the records that they're sampling. Sometimes I will have a record or I'll hear a song and I'll bring it to one of my producers and ask them to chop it up. And then I'll end up going over it. But a lot of the time, and I would say most of the time, those guys are making the records by themselves, but or making them in the studio right then and there, because that'll happen too. They'll make the record in the studio. They'll be making the beat. I'll like where they're going with it. I'll like the rhythm. And then I'll begin pinning a song to it. But I'm 100% in terms of building and just producing the overall record, 100% involved. I mean, we'll start with I might start with a verse or a couple pieces of a verse, and then we'll figure out I'll finish my verse, lay another verse. We'll figure out the hook. We'll maybe do the song, 3-4 times. It might be 3-4 different songs with different versions of the hook, maybe different versions of the verses. And then in terms of coming up with ideas for what audio we want to put over the song to add some more texture. I mean, I'm 100% involved in that whole process, and that is what I really love, that type of shit. I like when I got my verses laid, because that's probably what happens first is we'll have the beats pretty much done for the most part, at least a rough skeleton for the beat, and then I'll lay my verses down, and then from there, you know, we'll start fucking with the hook and stuff like that. But then even there, we'll start to say, okay, what other instruments can we bring in? And this is something that was definitely something we stepped up for the album in terms of how much attention to all of these details we were paying. And because it's something that's we've done over the mixtapes, but we really got into it with the album. But yeah, then we'll take the track, build it up from there, add extra sounds, add extra instrumentation. Do we need a vocalist? What other MCs should we get? And what features? Does it need features, or does it need another voice? Does it need audio on it? Does it need more ad-lib? Should we bring in another, should we bring in somebody else just to ad-lib it and start to add all these layers and textures? And that's something that takes, we'll just go over it for a while. You know, it's nothing, if the song's not complete until we hand it in, or until it's mixed and mastered. So that's the type of shit that we'll go over and over and over again. And that's especially with the album, you know, we really spent, just a shitload of time creating songs. We made, 50 songs for the album or so, and scaled it down and different versions of those songs. And I'm I'm heavily involved in all of that. I mean, I love that process.
I was just going to say, dude, isn't that the best shit ever? Like being in the studio and then being able, I always call that putting on the special sauce. Once you've got, you know, the meat of the sandwich done, and I don't even eat meat, but I mean, as far as having, you know, the goods, and then afterwards, it's just kind of sprinkling on all the little nuances, all the little things. That is the best feeling. I mean, I say this to my wife, like if I wasn't in radio or if I wasn't doing this, I could just spend all day, every day in the studio doing just that. Is that not the best shit?
It totally is. And it's really an ill feeling to have this idea of something in your mind and then to have it be brought out and be produced into the physical world, you know, and then be able to, you know, listen to this idea. And especially like, cause it's me, but then it's also the people, you know, my producers who's making the beat. It's my manager. It might be one of my homeboys who's rapping on the track. It might be one of my homies who just is in the studio who has an idea. And we sort of, it's cool to bounce these ideas and like you said, start to add that extra layer after you have everything. You know, it's amazing, man, for it to come into fruition. It's I love it, man. It's really fulfilling. It's fulfilling creatively to have that and then to be able to produce it. It's dope, you know. And on this record, so like with the album, is the album's really special to me, and I'll talk about that in the creative process of that, because it was 100% original music. We didn't sample anything. And I'm very proud of all my producers, B-Rock, Kometic, Des Anthony, Tele Fresco, El Tremendo. I'm really proud of all those guys, because those guys are very used to sampling vinyl and sampling old soul records and then chopping up the beats and putting them together. So to have to create original music using original sounds was something that was very new. That was new ground for them. And I'm really proud of them. And I think they did an ill job with that.
Where did they get the actual music from? Sorry to cut you off again, but where did they get like the, so if you're talking about creating the actual musical palette, were these guys playing instruments and then sampling them, or were they bringing in other session players to play them then mess with them?
On a lot of music, it would start with, all the music would start with them on like the machine, and they would just have sound kits. So they would just be using the sound packs that they were getting off of the machine and like Complete and stuff like that.
Right.
And then taking those and then, having different people come in and add instrumentation or vocals and chopping up people's vocals and stuff like that to give the music that extra layer. But it was also, I got to have like my mom come in. It was, you know, and to have her, just to have her, we just recorded a conversation. We had the microphone on and just recorded a conversation with me and her hanging out, you know, and then chopping it up and putting that on the record. I have my cousin singing background vocals on the record. I have my son's mother calling in when she's incarcerated. She's calling in from prison, and her talking to my son and her singing to my son.
Oh man.
You know, I got that on the record. I have another friend of mine who's in prison who calls in. And I got that phone call, and you know, I got my friends shooting dice and us hanging out. So all the audio, all of the sound bites that are on the album are all my friends. It's the stories that I'm telling, it's the actual characters of the stories that I'm telling. You know, it's their voices. And so creating that, I mean, having my friend shoot, I had my friend who's been doing my photography for years. He shot the cover art. I had another friend of mine, who's an amazing artist. He did, the art for the vinyl, inserts, the vinyl sleeves. I had you know, it was just such an organic, piece, and to have all of the people around me, you know, all the features are my friends, you know, and people who are from Seattle, people that I have relationships with. It's not like I didn't really call anybody in to do any records. It was people that I've already been working with and already have relationships with. And that was very special to me in terms of the creative process and it being an original piece, but also being such an organic piece, you know, to have all these people come together. And it's something I'm very proud of. I think it's the best shit that I've put together so far.
Let's talk about the title, the watercolor. What does the watercolor mean to you?
Watercolor was a title that I had for a couple years now. I like to, I like to, I really do like to think of myself and as a painter in terms of what I'm doing with music. And I fancy myself a painter as an MC. And it was but it was something that I wanted to I wanted to really paint a picture, and I wanted my album to be a very vivid image of my life. I also wanted it to be colorful. I wanted it to feel colorful. The music, I wanted the lyrics to feel colorful and the sounds to feel colorful and vibrant. And I wanted it to, I wanted the music, in terms of the tracks, if each track is a different color or if each track is a multitude of colors, I wanted those colors to bleed together. Like watercolor does on canvas, you know, I wanted these colors to seep into each other, and I wanted the whole project or all of the, you know, all of the individual tracks to make up, one overall piece, you know, if you listen into it as one, you know, front to back as a body of work. And, it also, you know, coming from Seattle in the Northwest, it's just really damp here, very damp and very wet. And, so, you know, watercolor was a title that I felt was just on point in terms of also what the sound was going to be. You know, it was going to be something that was very damp and a wet sound, but also very colorful. So there's a lot that went into that title, and it was something that I've been holding on to and knew that I was going to use for my debut album once I had gotten a deal and everything. And I really just wanted this piece to feel, and in general I want my shit to feel like I'm painting you a picture, but more so I wanted this piece to feel like you were really sort of diving into the colors of a piece and just getting lost in a canvas, you know, as you listen to it.
Well, I think your mission has been accomplished. The world will get to have their ears, you know, kind of blessed by this record next month. What will 2017 mean for the rest of, you know, the year for you? What's the foreseeable future for somebody like yourself?
The rest of the year is really going to be spreading the record and trying to tour nationally and internationally. I want to get this record out there, get my music out there, and represent my scene, represent my city, represent Seattle, represent Sub Pop, and represent my team, represent Intratech, and get out and tour and start to just spread my music as far as I can, and you know, meet as many new people as I can, and just soak up new experiences. Get to work on the second album, honestly. Release more music throughout the year. Release a lot more visual content. And just turn shit up. You know, I just want to get my music out there and represent.
There you have it, our conversation with the one and only Porter Ray. What a sweetheart that guy is. A real cool, calm cat. It was neat because I had him on Skype and I was watching him, but he couldn't see me. But let's put it this way. He was getting in the right frame of mind during that interview. If you've seen any of the videos, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But please do yourself a favor and make sure that you get that album, Porter Ray and Watercolor. And he even that Sub Pop release, but he even told you exactly why he came up with the title for that record. And I just know for a fact this is going to be somebody that we are going to be so happy that we had on the show when we did, because I just see him just kind of, you know, going to a whole other level, you know. But there's a couple of tracks that if you want to hear from the new record that are over not only on his personal site or on Facebook as well, but over at the Sub Pop website, and you might want to check that out before the record drops. But the brand new album is coming on, I believe, March 10th is the official release for the brand new Porter Ray album. So make sure that you pre-order a copy of that. It's pretty simple. All you need to do is just go out to the Sub Pop website and check it out through the Sub Pop Mega Mart and pre-order the LP, which is going to be exciting. March 10th, Watercolor from Porter Ray. Now, next week, we are going to be talking about noise bands, and I'm so excited. And it's funny that we're releasing our chat with No Age next week, because No Age just finished up a contract with Sub Pop Records. In fact,
amazing.
Yeah, Randy Randall, the front man. Oh, I guess he's the only guitar player in the band, because they're a two-piece. You can't call anybody a front man, because Dean, who plays drums, is kind of the singer, and then Randy does everything else that you hear as far as any of the music for No Age. But if you're a big fan of guitar rock and noisy stuff. Do not miss next week's episode, because Randy and I get right down to it, talking about his pedal setup, the formation of the band, some of the gear that they use. He talks to me from their rehearsal space and even sent me some pictures as well. So be sure to check out next week's episode, all right? Your homework, no age. Go and get some of this stuff in your life. And for everybody else, let's make sure that we get some shares on social. Let's get these numbers to jump up, all right, and spread the love. And thanks to our good friends at Sub Pop Records and, of course, to Atomic Film Shop, Kate and Ryan. And be sure to check out their lovely project, by the way. They're in a band called Robot Eyes. They just played the Horseshoe Tavern last week and filled the room. So please do yourself a favor. Check out some of that
stuff. They
have
a drummer now, man.
They're playing live with a drummer. She has a voice of an operatic angel. Ryan Ford doing all the music, and then they've got a live drummer with them as well right now, too. But let's name drop them real quick. Go check out the music of Robot Eyes. Get some Porter Ray in your life, of course. And next week, we will be joined by Randy Randall of No Age. All right. I think that was a good one. Chris, I had a blast talking with you today. And, you know, go out there and enjoy some of that sunshine. We'll be back next week. All right? Sound good?
Sounds good, brother.
All right, brother. One love from us to you. This has been another great episode, if I don't mind saying so myself, of Knobs.